Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And it is Tuesday, coming out of a holiday weekend, and we thank you for joining us today on the Brad Sessmatt Show, sports360az.com. I'm Jeff Munn. Obviously, Brad is not here, but we still have a full show. Hope your holiday weekend was a good one. It was certainly busy from a sports point of view, and that's why we're here. We're going to go over everything that took place in the weekend in sports. And among other things, it is the first day of the week, so we'll have our regular visit with Paula Bovin, who now, I'm told by my friend Eric Sorensen, that she is now known as the professor, which is appropriate because she's on the faculty at the Cronkite School at Arizona State University. We'll talk about the major news events of the day with Paula and also get into a little reflection on the passing of someone in sports media over the weekend, a very profound figure, maybe somebody you haven't heard of, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And in our final segment, I'm going to talk a little bit about, I like to talk about media quite often when I do this show, and I'm not going to talk specifically about media, but just something that I hear little rumbles about, and I wonder to myself if maybe it's time for the network that carries it and the sport that is involved to consider doing away with something we've grown accustomed to on Sunday nights during the baseball season. Okay, you figured out where I'm going with that. And with that having been said, let's bring in Eric Sorensen. Now, E, I'm going to look right at you because I don't have the monitor in front of me to tell me, you know, where you are in the screen if you're in a square or anything.
I'll go in and turn on one of those TVs, but I'm right over.
Okay, so if I look up this way, it will look like I'm actually looking.
Yeah, my bad. It's yeah, we'll get the studio set up for you properly.
Robert Reed from the Brady Bunch thing.
Yeah, exactly. All we need is like eight more boxes. You could put you in a box, have Jared Nielsen in a box.
I got to get a hold of my guy, Bill Gutekunst. I got another one for him.
Oh, okay.
I won't go into it now.
Oh, you're not doing Thursday show, so.
Okay,
sorry.
Maybe we'll just have him on for
a minute. We got your friend Espo in on Thursday. So.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah.
Lead story of the day, and tells you that it's a very busy time. By the way, we're also on azcentralsports.com. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. Two major topics for us to discuss. Let me get out of the way first of all.
Two major topics with two polarizing figures in different sports.
Indeed. I do want to mention very quickly, we are aware of the fact that the D-backs did lose in walk-off fashion yesterday at Pittsburgh to the Pirates. And they'll go at it again this evening, game two of that three-game series. D-backs have now lost three straight on their current road trip.
Which I think the road trip ends sometime in late August.
Yeah.
They're gone for quite a while. 11
they
games.
They go from Pittsburgh to Miami.
Games.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long trip.
And, we've got so much to talk about. I'll just throw this out there. Go look at the Rockies' road record and the D-backs' road record. And that'll tell you why. The thing that would be disturbing to me as a D-backs fan, they went on that string of winning 10 of 11, and they're still not in first place.
No.
So, I mean, that tells you, number one, how good Colorado's been. Anyway, the major news in baseball yesterday occurred in San Francisco. Hunter Strickland, the Giants' hard-throwing right-handed relief pitcher, facing Bryce Harper yesterday at AT&T Park. And this goes back. Usually there's some root cause of a beanball incident. But with Harper at the plate yesterday, in the late stages of the Nationals game with the Giants, he was hit by a pitch on the backside. Washington won the game 3-0. Two outs in the eighth, Strickland hit Harper with a 98-mile-per-hour fastball in the right hip. And I think it's important to point out the location of where the pitch landed. Harper immediately pointed toward Strickland, yelled at him, charged toward the mound, threw his helmet in Strickland's direction. A fight ensued, and unlike a lot of these baseball scraps, it actually was a fight in the sense that there were punches thrown. Obviously, both benches cleared. Strickland and Harper both were ejected from the game. Now, if you're wondering where did this all get rooted, apparently it goes all the way back to the National League Division Series of 2014. Harper had gone 2-for-2 against Strickland with a pair of home runs, including a long homer in Game 4 at AT&T Park that landed in McCovey Cove. I'm reading from an MLB.com story. Harper stopped and stared in the batter's box at the home run, raised his hand as he rounded first base, and stared at Strickland on the mound. All right. Given that, number one, if you're going to say, well, gee, that was 2-3 years ago. Look, everybody in baseball has a really good memory. They don't forget these things. Okay. Now, I'm going to give you my take on this, and then I'm going to get Eric Sorensen in to kind of bat this around, so to speak, with yours truly. I've always been a big proponent of let the game police itself. I'm not crazy about the warnings that are issued. I think there are times, and we saw it earlier this year with the Orioles and Red Sox, where there's just too many restrictions put on teams by the umpires. And the umpires are not doing this as a power play. They're given instructions by the commissioner's office. You have to handle it this way. But I think in most cases, the players do a pretty good job of just taking care of things themselves. Two and a half years, a long time to remember a guy hot-dogging around the bases after you gave up a home run to him. Yeah, it's a little long, but as I said, baseball players, pitchers, position players, regardless, have tremendous memories. So where do we find fault in this? And this is where I'm going to get Eric Sorensen involved, just because we were debating this before we came on. If it was me, it's not me. I don't have any doubt in my mind that Bryce Harper is going to get a suspension. My guess is they'll suspend him for 10 games. He'll appeal it. It'll get knocked down to 5 or 3. However, and go with me on this for a second, if I was in, and I think Joe Garagiola Jr., the former D-backs GM, still has a major say in the discipline that's handed out. Joe Torre, obviously, is, I think, the guy that is the final say in these things. I got to be honest with you. I'm not doing much to Strickland. And I'm basing this on two factors. Number one, he was just settling a score with a guy, and he hit him in the hip, very close to the rump. If he had thrown at Harper's head, then yeah, Strickland needs to be disciplined, suspended, whatever they can do. You don't go at a guy's head. On the other hand, I'm hitting Harper with a suspension. I'm hitting him hard. I'm not letting him just walk in and say, I'm going to appeal it, and, oh, okay, we'll go to 5 games. He threw an object at Strickland. He charged the mound against Strickland. In my viewpoint, Strickland has every right in the world to defend himself, and he did. He landed a couple of punches, as you saw in the video. Now, your contention, Eric, and I agree with this, is we were talking about this before the show started today, that you feel like it's not a great look for Major League Baseball to have this kind of incident occur on a day like Memorial Day, when obviously baseball is going as far as they can to promote patriotism, the special uniforms that were being worn, and then to have an incident like this, especially with a star player.
Exactly.
It's just not a good look.
Exactly. I don't understand what – I understand you need to protect your teammates, and I understand revenge and beanballs. That's a part of baseball. I do get that.
Okay.
Nothing comes out of these brawls. Nothing. The only thing that comes out is – like you said, a suspension, which is almost always appealed, which is almost always reduced, and the silliness of these baseball fights stays in the news cycle, stays on the crawl, stays on the bottom line, and baseball, which is grasping for the younger audience, could be without one of their young stars because he charged them out over an incident that happened over 2 years ago. And I don't get it. Like, baseball, like you said, they're trying to repair their image. They're trying to make the game faster. They're trying to make the game cleaner. And then you have Bryce Harper charging the mound in San Francisco for a day game on Memorial Day when a lot of people are watching baseball.
Yeah, and my comeback to you on this is if your solution is to keep this from happening again, penalize Hunter Strickland as much as you can and say, look, it was 2 years ago, let it go. I don't know how you legislate that.
And if it was a Bryce Harper, I don't think this would be nearly as big of a story. Because
you're right.
I mean, Bryce Harper was fighting with one of his own teammates, Jonathan Papelbon, in their dugout, what, a couple years ago, last year?
Oh, yeah.
So he is a lightning rod for controversy to begin with. And I just wonder how baseball can make the right choice in terms of discipline But also, and they're playing again tonight. You realize this thing might not end. They're playing the Nats are playing the
well. I would think
the Giants tonight.
Okay, I would think first of all, number one, I would think baseball would try to react as quickly as they could in terms of whatever discipline they're going to hand out. In part because yes, Harper would be in the lineup tonight, and there's a chance that Hunter Strickland would pitch tonight. My guess is from Strickland's standpoint, it's done. That you know he got his fastball on Harper's backside, that issue's settled. So I don't think if Strickland faces Harper tonight, you're going to see another beanball incident. On the other hand, you cannot legislate things like guys having it stuck in their memory that this guy hot-dogged on me running around the bases in 2014. I don't think you can legislate that out of the game. The part that bothers me is Harper charged the mound, threw an object. He didn't throw it very accurately. Thank goodness he didn't take a bat with him, but he threw his helmet at Strickland. And I don't think anybody should be upset. And here comes the video again. There's the throw. Well, he was a little offline. But you know what? At that point, Strickland has every right in the world to defend himself. And if that means throwing a punch at Bryce Harper, I'm not advocating it. I'm not condoning it, but I understand it. And if it was me, and it's not me, Harper would get hit very hard with a penalty. And I would just basically say, maybe I suspend Strickland for a couple of games, knowing that he would appeal it and he'd probably get it down to one. I really wouldn't penalize Strickland that much. He was doing something that's been part of the game for 100-plus years. And
look at where he hit him. I mean, right. He didn't even hit him in the back. He hit him in the back of the butt with a straight fastball.
As I said, if he went at the head, that's a whole other deal.
Absolutely.
You don't go to the head. And he didn't. And these guys are major league pitchers. They know where to put a pitch. If he wanted to throw at his head, he could have hit his head. So that's the part. And I also think it's time for baseball. And again, I don't blame the umpires for this. It's time for baseball to say to the umpires, look, let these guys handle this themselves to a certain degree and not be so heavy-handed in issuing warnings before games. I'm almost certain if Strickland gets in the game tonight and faces Harper, it wouldn't shock me if the plate umpire, whoever it is, issues a warning before Harper even gets in the box. That, to me, is a little overboard. Well, there's item number one. Item number two involves Tiger Woods. And yes, he had an explanation for what happened yesterday, and it doesn't fly with me. We'll explain that next on the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Tuesday on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. On a Tuesday, the Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn for Brad. We'll be back in here tomorrow. I believe Brad is off the entire week, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Mr. Sorensen? We're going to talk about Tiger Woods. I got to do this for 30 seconds because I just found this. A story on For the Win, which is USA Today's little sidebar sports thing. Tennis player Maxime Hamu put on a clinic on how not to behave during a post-match interview yesterday after his French Open loss to Pablo Cuevas. The 21-year-old was interviewed by reporter Maylie Thomas, who I assume she's with French television. For some reason, Hamu decided to kiss Thomas, who clearly wanted no part of it. He tried three times to kiss her during the interview. And the reporter, Thomas, told the BBC if it had not been on live television, she would have punched him. That allows us to segue into Tiger Woods because it's another example of people are capable of anything. I'll tell a quick story. I was a news anchor at KTAR in 1994 when there was a little, on a Monday in June, there was a little story that said O.J. Simpson's wife stabbed to death, Simpson being questioned. And everybody in the newsroom said, come on, O.J. would never do that. And I thought to myself at the time, people are capable of anything. So, and it ties into this story about Tiger Woods. Now, I heard somebody say yesterday on a national radio show that Tiger Woods' fall from the summit is as precipitous a fall as O.J. Simpson's, and I'm not quite ready to go to that extreme. But here is the news as we have it up to the minute. According to reports in Florida, the police who pulled over Tiger Woods or approached his vehicle, which was running, prior to arresting him on a DUI charge early Monday, said that Woods had extremely slow and slurred speech and struggled with several roadside tasks. The report noted that the golfer changed his story about where he was going and where he was coming from. Now, Woods has issued a statement in which he said there was no alcohol involved and a breathalyzer or a blood test proved a 0.0.
Breathalyzer, I believe.
Breathalyzer, and alcohol was not apparently a factor. Woods says his condition stemmed from an unexpected reaction to prescription medication. Now, let me just hit you want to talk about all-time bad mugshots. Nobody looks good in a mugshot, but he looks really bad in a mugshot. Let me just say a couple of things. Number one, there is no doubt in my mind that he's taking prescription medications. How many surgeries has he been through? How much has his back bothered him? I think he's also had surgery on a knee, at least one knee. So is he on some sort of painkiller medication? Oh, I would think so. But here's the part this morning, and even when he said it was prescription medication, my reaction was still, okay, but you still got charged with DUI. He didn't get charged with drunk driving. He got charged with driving under the influence, which takes in a whole wider spectrum than just alcohol. Here's the part that kind of jumps out at me. The 14-time major champion was taken into custody at 2:49 a.m. Eastern Time Monday morning, booked at 7:18, released on his own recognizance at 10:50. Okay, if he was taken into custody at 2:49, he's probably found by police at around 2 a.m., maybe 1:30 at the outside. My question becomes, what's he doing? What's he doing out at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning? I mean, you know, what's the old phrase? Nothing good ever happens after midnight. So, okay, there was no alcohol involved. But was there something that would raise suspicions? Because he was out at 2:49 in the morning?
And because of Tiger's past?
Yes.
His addictive personality? It's more than fair for us to speculate the question that you just asked.
I think it's very fair.
What's he doing out at 1:30 in the morning?
Well, I mean, think about it.
We've all been out late, but when you're Tiger Woods and when people are watching your every single step and every single move, whether it's coming back to golf, whether it's his addiction to sex, whether it's his divorce. I mean, he, like Bryce Harper, even in a bigger sense, is a lightning rod for the sport, game of golf.
He needs to be smart enough to recognize all those things you just mentioned. And if it, you know, okay, let's go with his story that he had an unusual reaction to painkiller medication. He was obviously pulled over the side of the road, but his vehicle was running.
And it was a very Tiger-esque way of handling the situation.
Yeah, let's
put out a release. I'm not going to get in front of a microphone. There's going to be no public apology, but read this release and take it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And my feeling is, are you just so out of it that you don't have the wherewithal to get out a cell phone and call Uber? Or call Lyft or whoever does that stuff, or call a cab.
Unless he was not thinking rationally because whatever was in his system.
Well,
I mean, you've had too much to drink, man. I've had too much to drink. It's easy to say, oh, yeah.
I can handle it.
Yeah, I can handle it. Or, oh, yeah, I should have called an Uber. I didn't. When you have things inside your body that are affecting your decision making, I'm not standing up for Tiger Woods. I just know a lot of people that have gotten DUIs that are not bad people, that are very good people that just made a bad decision.
Right.
And I think more than anything, money, this is just sad. I mean, I saw this sad line yesterday on the crawl on ESPN, and I didn't poke fun at Tiger. I just kind of shook my head like, well, whatever endorsements he had left will probably now be gone, and now it's just another black eye for Tiger.
And I think somebody said to me yesterday, Jack Nicklaus can now sleep very peacefully knowing his major record is not going to get touched. I think that's over. I think Tiger as a competitive golfer is over. To just play it long term, if I was advising Tiger, how old is he? He's in his early 40s. I would be thinking very seriously right now about taking as much time as necessary to get physically healthy, to get emotionally healthy, to kick the demons that he has, and think seriously about the Champions Tour. Now, again, I don't know his exact age, but he's not 50. So he's several years away from the Champions Tour. But come on, let's be honest, friends. The days of him being a factor of any kind on the PGA Tour are done.
And we as Americans, Money, we love a comeback. And it doesn't even have to be a comeback on the golf course. For Tiger to reinvent himself in a different way, I mean, look at like Mike Tyson. There are all these great athletes that find their way, whether it's acting or being an analyst or doing something. Alex Rodriguez, his role now with Fox, arguably, you know, hated by most baseball fans. Even Barry Bonds softening his image now a little bit.
You know, you mentioned Alex Rodriguez. I don't know if you heard, but he signed a deal with ABC News. And I thought, good,
he's
following the Michael Strahan plan.
Yes.
He's going to be on every network. So I guess the next step is Alex Rodriguez will host a game show this summer on ABC.
There you go.
Aren't they bringing back the Gong Show? Wouldn't he be perfect to be on the Gong Show?
Yeah.
I mean, let's think. The Gong Show is a show about no-talent people going on and trying to fool celebrities. I think Alex Rodriguez would be a perfect fit to host
that
show.
Ding, ding, ding.
I'm sorry, I didn't say that. I think this is, you're right. America does love comeback stories, and there will always be an opportunity. First of all, no matter what happens through the court system with this charge, I don't see a situation where Tiger is going to be incarcerated.
No, this will go away. This eventually will. I mean, this will still, like I said, this will be another smudge on his ledger, but this will fade from the news cycle.
And he'll have the chance to rehabilitate his image, to get his life back in order. And obviously, it's up to him. If he decides that's what he wants to do, he can do it, and America will embrace him.
I mean, I wonder if most Americans, whether it be golf fans or just sports fans in general, even want to see Tiger back, because the PGA does have a good core of young stars, but no one to move the needle like Tiger moved the needle.
Okay. I was just thinking that same thing. If hypothetically he was able to get better in all facets. And in 2018, I don't think you could expect this at the Masters, but maybe at the U.S. Open. How do you think the TV ratings would be if Tiger Woods goes to Father's Day Sunday at the U.S. Open within two shots of the lead?
Huge ratings.
It would blow everything. It'd be the very thing Fox has been waiting for since they got the TV rights to the U.S. Open, which is another story unto itself. But clearly, this is, when I heard the story yesterday, I thought, well, okay, let's just look at it from the golf standpoint first. He's done. I don't see him being a factor on the PGA Tour again. Champions Tour, maybe. And wouldn't that be great for the Champions Tour? John Daly, didn't he just start out on the Champions Tour? Played in one of their major events last weekend. And certainly there's an opportunity for him to recover or rehabilitate his life in that respect. But I think anybody that thinks they're going to see Tiger Woods atop the leaderboard at a major, or any tournament for that matter, I just don't believe that's going to happen. And it is sad. And thank goodness all that happened was he was on the side of the road and his car was running. Thank goodness there was no injury involved and there was no loss of life involved. And for that, he too should be very, very, feel very fortunate. Paula Bovin joins us, our regular visit with the professor. We'll talk about both of these items in the news. And we'll talk a little bit about Frank DeFord. If you don't know who Frank DeFord is, stick around. I think you'll be fascinated with the story of a man who left us yesterday. And we'll talk about all that with Paula up next on the Brad Sesmat Show, sports360az.com and azcentral.com. We don't obviously get to read Paula Bovin anymore because she's no longer with AZ Central, but we still get to hear from her each week on the Brad Sesmat Show on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. And she joins us for her weekly segment here on a Tuesday. And by the way, she now has the nickname, I didn't know this, of the professor. And she joins us now. And first of all, congratulations on your new nickname from sports360az.com, Paula. Can I still just call you Paula?
You can call call me Paula. In fact, I would prefer it.
Okay, very good. I want to get to the two major stories that we've discussed already on the show in a second, but let me just get a thought from you, because we talk about this occasionally, about the D-backs in this respect. I think they did lose a game yesterday on a walk-off home run. They're 2-3 on the trip. I look at their situation, and I think, okay, they went on that stretch where they won 10 of 11, and they made up close to no ground on the Rockies, and the Dodgers actually made up ground on them. I kept thinking to myself, have they just taken their best shot? And if they have, I know that there was a story over the weekend that Mike Hazen said, we're not going to sacrifice long-term goals. Don't they still have to think about unloading Greinke no matter what happens over the next 6 weeks?
No.
I'm starting to agree with you, but I'm not quite there yet.
Well, one, and I probably am in the minority in this, but I don't think Colorado's going to keep this up. I just have a feeling it's not going to happen. So, yeah, it's tough, this division they're in, fighting for position. They've got the Dodgers to worry about, all kinds of things. But, man, when I look at teams that are successful, they have that ace. And Greinke is living up, finally, to sort of who we thought he'd be, not to sound like Dennis Green.
I thought of that line, too.
I just feel like it's happening with Greinke. And it's nice, if you're a fan of this team, to have a guy who goes out and you think, this is going to be good. So I think there's a mojo with this team I haven't seen in a couple of years. I feel like, one, that even late in the game and they're losing, I still feel like they're in it. You know, they had that one year several years ago, all those comeback wins. I feel as an observer of this team, they're just in a lot better place. So, no, I don't want them to go and get a deal with Greinke where they get a bunch of other players. I just think they need that ace.
Well, I don't think they would. I want to get on one other thing, and then we'll go to the other news of the day. I don't think a deal involving Greinke is going to involve players. I think they're going to have to find a team, and I know who it is. It's the Chicago Cubs, who can call them and say, we'll take the contract. We'll eat it. Every dime of it, and maybe we'll send you an A-ball player to make it look better. But they're not going to get any prospects. The other thing, Paula, that concerns me going toward the deadline, if they stay in the race, everybody, from Ken Kendrick on down, is going to be screaming for Hazen to do something to upgrade that roster at the deadline. He can't. Reason? They don't have any prospects. The farm system is empty. And anybody that is a good prospect in the Diamondbacks system is already wearing a Diamondbacks uniform. He can't make a trade. The only way he can make a trade is to take somebody off the 25-man, which makes it counterproductive. So that's why I still say, look, I think they have to keep their options open, because they really can't get involved in trying to go for that missing piece that will make them a championship team, because they have absolutely nothing to offer a team that they would try to get in with as a trade partner.
Well, I mean, that is the one part of this whole conversation that just almost leaves me aghast. How did they get that to this point where their farm system, you know, and they won't say it's barren, but, I mean, you look around the people who know baseball and talk about baseball, it's pretty barren, and that's really disappointing. I know that they've developed young talent in the past, and, in fact, remember the early years of this franchise, there was a lot of positive talk about that farm system.
Oh, yeah.
So that, to me, of this storyline you're talking about right now, this is probably the worst part of it, is what's in store. I mean, they've got to fix that problem soon.
Yeah, and my contention all along has been, the sooner they get on with it, the better for the organization. All right, let's move on. A quick thought about the brawl in San Francisco yesterday. My position is Harper should get penalized to the extreme for charging the mound. I don't really think much should be done to Hunter Strickland, because he hit Harper on the rear end. Yeah, 2.5 years is a long time to hold a grudge. But at that point, if Harper doesn't charge the mound, the matter's settled. And to me, where it got out of hand was Harper charging the mound. So if I'm Joe Torre, I'm sitting Harper down for 10 days, knowing they're going to appeal it down to 5.
Well, I mean, I agree with you to an extent, Jeff, but the part that really bothers me is the reasoning behind what Hunter Strickland did. I mean, you know, is it because 2 years ago this guy did so well against him? It's the stupidest reason for me to hit somebody. And, you know, he can say it was unintentional. You talk to anyone in baseball, it was intentional.
And sure.
So in that regard, I can understand Harper's reaction. It's like, gosh, he just wants to, you know, charge the mound. And go ahead.
According to MLB.com, I just want to interject this. Apparently, sure. When Harper hit a home run against Strickland in Game 4 of the Division Series in 2014, he apparently stared out at Strickland and took his time getting out of the batter's box. And again, I know on the one hand, it's like, okay, that's kind of silly to be upset with a guy for that. But we all know baseball, Paula, you've been around it, I've been around it. Guys do get upset. They don't like to be shown up. They don't like it when Jose Bautista flips his bat. And so I don't think it was just strictly, well, this guy got two home runs off me in 2014, I'll show him.
Yeah, well, and that's interesting. I hadn't read that part of it, but my goodness, it's still 3 years. But these guys have long memories. You know, this is the aspect of the game, and granted, I think because I never played it, that maybe I can't embrace it, but it's always been hard for me with these unwritten rules of baseball, of plunking guys, charging mounds. It's just a bizarre thing to justify on either end. So it's really hard for me to have any clarity on it. But I mean, obviously there should be fine suspensions and all those things. It's just, to me, it's just this bizarre unwritten rules of the game thing that I really don't get.
And it's still out there, and it's going to be out there. A quick thought too about Tiger Woods. And we hear new details today that, according to the Orlando Sentinel, when police found Tiger Woods, they say that he told them that he thought he had been playing golf in California. And was that the way it was worded? I'm going to get Eric Sorensen in on this. He thought he had been playing in a tournament in California. He was asleep when they found him. An 0.0 on the breathalyzer, so asleep in a car in Florida. Whatever the circumstances are, to me, I mean, first of all, I didn't envision seeing him in a competitive situation on the PGA Tour again ever. I think this just kind of ties it up, and that's done. The next time you may see him is in the Champions Tour.
Yeah, it's you know what? I think my reaction more than anything for this one, Jeff, was sort of sadness. A lot of times there's anger. A lot of times there's, you idiot, my reaction. For me, it was just, it's sad. I know that I read that he blew a 0.00, so it's definitely some kind of prescription medication, as he said. And, you know, who knows? Is it related to dealing with his back injury? Is it related to some kind of depression? I mean, there could be all kinds of circumstances. He shouldn't have been in the car. I mean, I read that he had his foot on the brake still when he was stopped. So he was asleep at the wheel with his foot on the brake. It's a dangerous situation. But I feel bad at what the direction that his career has taken, because, you know, I'm one of those people. I watch golf. If Tiger's playing, I'm watching it more likely than not. He was one of those guys that had that impact on me. The story's really sad.
I agree with you, and I think there's a lot of people in that category. Christine Brennan, by the way, wrote a great piece concerning Tiger in USA Today, and I'm sure you've probably seen it already. If not, you'll probably get to it. But on the subject of writers, we lost Frank DeFord yesterday. Many people in our audience may not know the name, but he was a giant in sports writing. I'm sure that he was somebody that you looked up to. And I was an admirer of Frank's because of what he went through with his daughter who died of cystic fibrosis. And I was just deeply saddened when I saw the news yesterday.
Me too. And certainly one of the guys when I was young that I read and looked up to. And you know what? He was one that sort of gave the profession credibility, I thought. There's always been this sort of joke of the sports writers being working in the toy department of the newspaper. He's one that advocated for many years that sports writing should be considered among Pulitzer Prizes. It never has been. There's never been that category. But he wrote with such beauty and with such thoughtfulness. I think he inspired a lot of other sports writers to write that way. And you're right. He was a giant in the field. And I hope people that don't know him take the time now to sort of read some of his past work. He was really, really good.
Do you remember The National? He was involved very heavily in The National. And I saw it a little bit, but it was hard to find here. Were you in Los Angeles at that time?
I was in Los Angeles. In fact, some of my colleagues that worked at the Los Angeles Daily News left to work at the National. It was a really exciting time. It was sort of this, you know, tabloid-like daily sports, almost magazine, you know, the newspaper, and it was fantastic. They just could not figure out a way to make it profitable. But they had a lot of top notch writers working for them.
Yeah, and it's as I said, I agree with you. Anybody who doesn't know the story of Frank DeForge should go online and read it. Paula, I wish we had more time, but we'll catch up with you again next week. And I have a feeling there'll be a whole lot more topics for Brad and you to talk about. So thanks. We'll
Absolutely.
Talk to you soon.
Great talking to you, Jeff.
Same here, and I'll catch up with you soon myself. Paula Bovin joining us, the professor, although she doesn't like that nickname. Joining us as she does each week here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Coming up, I'm going to preface this. If you're going to say, "Oh, I know he's going to point at one person in particular," no, I'm not. But I'm getting into the camp that says it may be time for baseball to get rid of Sunday night games. I'll explain next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. On a Tuesday, thanks for joining us here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. We'll be back tomorrow for Brad. And among our guests, ESPN baseball writer Pedro Gomez, who his son will be with the U of A down at the NCAA Regionals in Lubbock, Texas, over the weekend. I had a chance to run into Pedro and his wife before one of the ASU U of A games. Mom always takes these things harder. She was so nervous that night. But great lady. And Pedro, of course, is one of our great friends, and I look forward to talking baseball with him tomorrow. I'm going to talk a little baseball here for a moment, and Eric Sorensen, jump in if you'd like to. And I need to explain this, and I'm going to do the best I can to capsulize this. I've had the good fortune the last couple of weeks of filling in for my dear friend Darren Sutton on his Sunday night Sirius XM baseball show. They have a nightly show on the MLB Network radio channel called MLB Round Trip. Sunday nights, Darren hosts the show, and they devote 2 hours of it to amateur baseball through Darren's work with the outfit Perfect Game, which is one of the leading showcases of amateur baseball and amateur baseball players in the country. But they devote the first hour to talking about the day in baseball. So he's had me do that hour for him for several weeks because he's been doing a lot of college baseball, a lot of traveling. They tape a lot of the interviews that they do in the second 2 hours ahead of time, but the first hour is live. Okay. So we come on after the Sunday night baseball game, which MLB Network Radio carries. I've tried 3 times to do this show. The first 2 times, I got on for 10 minutes after the Cubs and the Red Sox went 3.5 hours. Second time, never got on because the Cubs and Yankees went 18 innings, which is, that happens. Actually, I've done it 4 times. Last week, Rangers and Tigers went 3:40, and we did a 15-minute show. This last Sunday, I did the show. Mets-Pirates, they actually went at a very brisk 3 hours and 10 minutes, and we were able to do a half-hour show. Okay, where am I going with this? I have the Sunday night baseball game on. I do the show from my apartment, and I'm watching the Sunday night baseball game, and all of a sudden, it occurs to me, why do we still have Sunday night baseball? Because there are so many things that are affected negatively by having a Sunday night game. Let's take the Cubs and Red Sox, for example. They went till 11:30 Eastern. Cubs were probably not wheels up from Logan Airport till 1:30 in the morning. They probably didn't get in their beds until 5 a.m., and they had a game the next night, which they lost. Doesn't matter. The Tigers, when they played the Rangers, they had to go to Houston after the game. I think they got to Houston around daybreak, played that night. 2 years ago, the Giants played a Sunday night game at Washington, were expected back in San Francisco the next night, and they had to petition the commissioner's office to let them spend Sunday night in Washington and fly home to San Francisco on the day of the game. There's all kinds of problems posed for the teams that play the Sunday night game. The games, because they're network games, the commercial breaks are longer. The games almost unavoidably are going to go 3 hours to 3.5. And now they're doing this thing where the broadcast crew, by the way, my favorite baseball play-by-play guy now that Vin Scully's retired and it's not close is Dan Shulman. Dan Shulman 1, John Miller 2. Shulman to me is in a class all by himself. And as much as I like Joe Buck, Shulman, if I had one guy to pick that I could listen to, it'd be Shulman. And he's on with Aaron Boone and Jessica Mendoza. The last couple of weeks, they've had him do games from the left field seats at Comerica Park in Detroit. Last Sunday night in Pittsburgh, they had him do it above the Clemente Wall. And it started to rain, and they had no protection, and it became a farce because the three announcers are getting drenched. Jessica Mendoza is begging people to give her a jacket, and a guy gave her a jacket, and she turned around and said, "I love you." And I thought, oh, great, some guy's going to grab that and put it on YouTube. Jessica Mendoza saying, "I love you," to a guy. And she's married, and it's just it. And it just raises the question to me, has Sunday night baseball run its course? Do we really need to have a Sunday night baseball game? Does ESPN do that well in the ratings that they have to have a Sunday night game?
I don't know. Do they do well in the ratings?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't watch a lot of Sunday night baseball. And what you
I think there's a lot of people like you.
What you just told me about ESPN putting their broadcast crew out in the outfield, to me, is just a total clown show. I mean,
it's a gimmick.
Why are you doing that?
And let me say this, and I want to be
like
very
ESPN,
careful.
Like ESPN needs any more bad publicity right now?
Let me say this, and I want to be very careful about it, because I want people to understand where I'm going with this. Jessica Mendoza is perfectly qualified for the role she's on that show. My sister-in-law, Ann Pearson, who's the head softball coach at Grand Canyon University, was an All-American in softball at ASU and had a career average batting of 320. And I've always said, anybody that can hit 320 over 4 years in fast-pitch softball has forgotten more about hitting than I'll ever know. So I'm not one of those guys that says, well, Jessica Mendoza's a woman, she doesn't belong on a telecast. No, she's qualified to do it. But let's be honest, friends, it's Jessica Mendoza. She's a female. It's a gimmick. ESPN, they could put her on Wednesday Night Baseball, and they have a couple times, and it doesn't garner any reaction. They put her on the Sunday night telecast, and you know why they did it. They did it because they needed a gimmick. When you have to start resorting to gimmicks, that means the show's dead. Okay? The show's dead. I don't think they need to do it anymore. Teams are hampered by playing the Sunday night game. When was the last time a team played Sunday night baseball and got the next day off?
And I don't think the exclusivity of playing on Sunday night being the only game is really that big of a deal.
It never has
been. Because
people
can consume baseball now, play-by-play, in so many different ways, on their tablet, on their TV, on their phones.
Now, when
you know, the MLB package, there are just so many games. It's different in football. If you're the Sunday night showcase game, that is the game.
Everybody
watches
it. That
is a huge honor. In baseball, you play 162
two games, exactly. When it started,
games a year.
When it started in 1990, then obviously no internet. There was cable, obviously, but
and did they do Baseball Tonight money like leading into Sunday Night Baseball?
Yeah,
they made like that a big deal.
Now they don't. Baseball Tonight is almost gone. ESPN's even resorted to picking up an MLB Network show, Intentional Talk, which I'm not a huge fan of because I think it's just an hour of just two guys being silly. But they've picked it up and they carry it on ESPN. It's almost like there is no baseball coverage at ESPN other than the games. And I contend that, yeah, it's 2017. We don't need to, you know, this is not the game of the week. You know, and FS1 has a game on Saturdays. The Big Fox Network has a Saturday primetime game. I don't think we need to rupture baseball schedules for teams and players. And I have a friend who's a Cub fan, and he's been crawling the walls about this since that game at Boston, and they came home the next night, played Philadelphia, and lost. And he keeps saying to me, what if they lose out on the postseason by one game? And it was that game that cost them the postseason berth. Well, I doubt it'll happen that way, but it could. And I'm just saying, and please believe me, friends, I'm not basing this on Jessica Mendoza in any way, shape, or form. But it is clear that using Mendoza on the Sunday night package is designed to be a gimmick. And if you're having to resort to gimmicks, that show's in trouble. And if I was baseball, I would be nudging ESPN to make it go away. Tomorrow we'll discuss that. And we'll bring this up to Pedro Gomez tomorrow as well on the program. And we'll also take a little closer look at the NBA Finals, because finally I think they're actually going to have an NBA Finals on Thursday. We'll get into whatever happens with the D-backs tonight in Pittsburgh and a lot more. You know how it works in this business. There's always something going on. So be sure to stay with this website, sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com, because you get all the late-breaking information right there. And be sure to join us every day at 10 o'clock or whenever you can, because we archive these shows for the Brad Sesmatch Show. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday. Sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com.